Hello and welcome to a most unusual edition of Powerhouse Politics. I'm ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Jonathan Karl, and we've just completed the podcast, but I had to come back on to the front of this to tell you that we had an interview with Ty Cobb, the White House lawyer. Very interesting interview, which we're going to play shortly. And then as soon as the interview was done, we learned that Cobb is out. He's resigning. He's leaving at the end of the month. So we very quickly got him back on the phone and found out what the heck is going on with that. He talks to us about why he's leaving the White House. He explains what will happen afterwards, gives a little bit of advice, to those who replace him. But we want to just play the full episode, my discussion with Rick Klein, the interview that we did with Cobb before news broke that that he's leaving the White House. Really, just another example of how quick things change in the Trump era. Anyway, here it is. Hello and welcome to Powerhouse Politics. I'm ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Jonathan Karl.
And I'm ABC News Political Director Rick Klein.
Rick, we've got a big guest. We have a big guest on the podcast today, an exclusive, a world exclusive. We will be joined on the podcast by Ty Cobb, White House lawyer, the White House lawyer charged with dealing with issues related to the special counsel investigation. I would argue this is a pretty timely interview.
It is a timely interview because all of these different forces are collapsing, colliding at the same time. And it means that a very real question now faces the president of the United States, which is, are you going to talk to the special counsel himself? We've talked all about all of the side investigations, the different indictments that have come out of it. We now know via the New York Times this the list of questions that Mueller's team wants to pose to the president. But we don't know if, when, whether there will actually be a discussion between Mueller's team and the president himself.
So you said the big question is what?
The big question is he going to talk?
Is the president going to talk to the
special
counsel?
Is the president going to talk to Robert Mueller and his team?
You know, I've actually asked the president that question before. I don't know if you remember this, but it was actually last summer, right in the Rose Garden joint press conference, I believe it was, where we were the prime minister of Lebanon at the point. But do you remember? I don't remember exactly what the answer was, but I think Trevor Hastings, our producer, has the tape.
Would you be willing to speak under oath to give your version of those
events? 100%.
100%. That sounded pretty definitive, but that was a long time ago.
Right.
So I ran into the president in Chief of Staff John Kelly's office in January of this year and asked him the same question again. Are you going to talk to Mueller?
I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah?
Do you have a date set?
Here's the story, just so you understand. There's been no collusion whatsoever. There's no obstruction whatsoever. And I'm looking forward to it.
Looking forward to it. So the question is he still looking forward to it?
Well, if you believe the president's Twitter feed, he may have some questions about that. I mean, just this morning, he's coming out and saying that that actually the investigation itself is a hoax, a setup, a trap. He's questioning the legitimacy of the questions that are being posed via his attorneys. He's even accusing Mueller's team of leaking these questions, which seems very doubtful since the questions seem to have been transcribed by the president's own attorneys. But a lot's happened since then. And the other factor that seems to have influenced the president's mind is the raid on Michael Cohen's office, which was a separate investigation that was spun off by the special counsel. We have heard from numerous White House aides and attorneys they want to make sure this president is doing this in good faith. Rudy Giuliani's brought on board. It seems like the pace is quickening here, John, that we're reaching a decision point. This investigation, the president was led to believe and said that he thought it would wrap up months ago, last year sometime. Here we are in May of the second year two of this investigation. And you still don't have this answer, but it seems like things are drawing to that decision point.
And in fact, we heard from John Dowd, who is, of course, the former lead attorney for the president, personal attorney for the president. And he has confirmed the report in The Washington Post that Mueller's team said that they would compel or they could compel the president to testify if these negotiations end up in a deadlock. That raises some very interesting constitutional questions. Can a president be subpoenaed to compel his testimony in a case like this?
These are all very good questions to ask to ask Ty Cobb.
That's right, and in some ways, there's precedent for a subpoena or the threat of a subpoena resulting in testimony by the president. But we don't actually know what would happen if the executive branch decides that no, the president is not going to cooperate. So this is used; it's been used, as you know, John. Well, the idea of a subpoena has been wielded as a weapon by special counsels, by other criminal grand juries, civil grand juries. In the past, it just hasn't gotten to that point. And that's why you talk about constitutional crisis. What happens if the president says, I don't think I'm covered by this. I don't think I have to do it. No one wants to get it to that point. I think that's the point the president has made and his attorneys have made. They want to find some kind of accommodation. But I wonder if trust has broken down to a degree or the list of questions out there has broken things to a degree that it just seems like it's impossible. You see numerous legal minds saying these questions have lots of traps in them. The president, we know this well, John, it's no big secret. He goes in strange directions. He isn't always.
He sometimes doesn't hew precisely to the truth.
That does happen. It has been known to
happen. And it's one thing to do that talking to us. It's one thing to do that at a rally. It's another thing to do that before prosecutors.
That's
federal
right.
prosecutors.
That's right.
It's a crime.
And we've already seen indictments flow out of this. The Mueller investigation itself. For lying to federal prosecutors or to the FBI. That's a big deal.
Right.
And the word, the phrase perjury trap has been thrown around quite a bit. And you have lots of people that appear to have the president's ear who are saying this is a bad idea to talk to Robert Mueller.
But this constitutional question of whether or not a president can be compelled to testify, you would think, I mean, it appears, and we have a scholar here, a renowned constitutional scholar at ABC News named Terry Moran. Who also doubles sometimes as our chief correspondent in London, but who points out that you have a long history of presidents being compelled to produce evidence in one case or another. He points out, goes all the way back. You remember, I think, I don't know if you covered it, but the Aaron Burr treason trial.
Yes.
And Thomas Jefferson was compelled to provide evidence in that case. You know, we have, of course, more recently Richard Nixon, the Watergate tapes were subpoenaed and had to be turned over, led to the end of the Nixon presidency. But the interesting question that's really never been resolved is what happens if one branch of government directs another branch of government to do something and the other branch says no?
Right.
So if the Supreme Court rules in the Watergate case, it was a 9-0
right, unanimous decision.
If the Supreme Court rules that the president must testify and the president says no, then what?
That's the crisis part. That's the constitutional crisis part. I mean, only time can tell. We're a lot of steps away from that, right?
We are a few steps away.
People talked about that potential constitutional crisis after the Whitewater investigation led to Monica Lewinsky and led to testimony by President Bill Clinton. They ended up accommodating the president by allowing video testimony. It was accompanied by lawyers. Not something that would be accommodating for anyone else, but they headed off that constitutional crisis. President Trump blows up institutions all the time, blows up norms all the time, challenges people in both word and in deed to say, wait a second, I don't care that it's been done like this before. So that seems to be the path that we're on right now. And it seems like in terms of the president's mindset on this, what we know of what he feels on this, he's pretty fired up on where Mueller is going with this. He's got friends in the media world who are backing him up on this. And he seems like he's primed for a fight.
Among the president's tweets this morning is one quoting Joe DiGenova, known, I think, most as a recent guest on Powerhouse Politics,
100%.
Also a former special counsel, independent counsel, and also somebody who was brought on to the president's legal team, well, almost brought on, had to stay off because of conflicts, because of other clients he represents. But this is an interesting tweet because he just simply quotes DiGenova from, we believe, Sean Hannity's show last night, about the power of the president to fire any executive branch employee, presumably including a special counsel. Are we headed back in that territory? I mean, this is the question we've been asking over and over again. And the White House has always insisted that the president's got no intention to fire anybody. We're told Rosenstein's job is secure, but is it?
Well, that's a great piece of this as well. Look, and the fact that the questions came out, you can read that a couple of different ways. A lot of people will point to potentially former people part of the legal team and say they put it out there. They're trying to shape the president's mind on either cooperating or not cooperating. One upshot is that people like DiGenova and others in the media world now are saying This shows that Mueller is way off of where he started. This isn't about – the president's wrong when he says there's no questions about collusion. There are questions that get collusion. But that list of almost 50 questions includes a whole lot that is far afield from the initial allegation or the initial charge of looking at Russian meddling. It went quite a bit ways, and it gets quite a bit of potential obstruction of justice. So if you're inclined to believe Mueller's got to stick to his original mandate, you look at this questionnaire and say – he is gone rogue. He is well beyond where he started, and he is where Ken Starr ended up, not where Bob Mueller began.
We're going to take a quick, very quick break, Rick, and when we get back, we're going to ask Trevor to get Ty Cobb on the phone for us. Back in a moment.
Brought to you by Indeed. Used by over 3 million businesses for hiring, where business owners and HR professionals can post job openings with screener questions, then sort, review, and communicate with candidates from an online dashboard. Learn more at Indeed.com/hire.
There's a lot coming at you right now. Turmoil, tweets, an insane amount of chatter. I'm Brad Milkey with ABC News, and I'm here to throw you a lifeline. It's a new podcast called Start Here, where our experts give you on-the-ground access to the biggest stories of the day. We're going to give you some context, some clarity among the chaos. 20 minutes every weekday. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and start here.
Hey, welcome back to Powerhouse Politics. We're going to get Ty Cobb on the phone in just a moment, Rick. First of all, you mentioned, or was it, or did I mention the name Rod Rosenstein?
Yes, indeed. You did it.
He had a very interesting, rare appearance here in Washington, public appearance, where he took some questions, including from members of the news media. And one of the interesting lines of questions, have you heard this, that there are members of the House that are drafting articles of impeachment?
Wait, House Republicans want to impeach. Big deal, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you were a Republican in the House, wouldn't you stay away from impeachment?
But
Mark Meadows, the head of the Freedom Caucus, Devin Nunes is on board with this, have drafted these articles of impeachment to impeach Rod Rosenstein, right, the deputy attorney general. Rosenstein had this to say about that.
There have been people who have been making threats privately and publicly against me for quite some time. And I think they should understand by now the Department of Justice is not going to be extorted.
The Department of Justice is not going to be extorted.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, this is all wrapped up in kind of a side issue around document presentations,
yes,
and requests by members of Congress for it. But of course, it is about Rod Rosenstein's leadership over this, because it's the deputy attorney general with Sessions' recusal. He oversees the Mueller investigation. A lot of folks hold him responsible ultimately.
All right. Let's see. Trevor, if you're listening there in the control room, can we do we have the technology to place a call to Ty right now? Trevor's good at this stuff.
He is. This is why we pay him the big bucks.
This is definitely why we're here. So while Trevor is getting Ty on the phone, it's an interesting response from the White House to Rosenstein.
Yeah.
They basically didn't comment.
Right. That's right.
You think one thing to... Hey, is this Ty Cobb?
It is Ty Cobb.
Jonathan Carl here at Powerhouse Politics, ABC News. How are you?
Hey, Jonathan. Good to talk to you.
Thank you very much for joining us. I want to start off with some general questions. I know you are of course a special White House counsel. You are not the president's personal attorney, but you represent the institution of the presidency in these dealings with those special counsel. Is that a correct way of describing what you do?
That's close enough.
Okay, so I want to start with some broad questions about the presidency itself. Can a subpoena be used to compel a president of the United States to testify?
So there are circumstances historically where, in the Clinton matter, he was forced to testify in the Jones case.
Right.
Those are different circumstances than would apply here. And the issue of a sitting president being called before a grand jury never got litigated in that case because Clinton and his counsel made arguments that caused the special prosecutor there, or the independent counsel there, Ken Starr, to withdraw the subpoena, and he appeared voluntarily. So that was never litigated. So it's still an open question.
And would
What would you say relevant to this case, if there were an effort, and we understand John Dowd has told us that the special counsel did raise the possibility of compelling the president to testify. Would you protect the institution of the presidency and fight such an effort like that all the way to the Supreme Court?
Well, I mean, I haven't been forced to make that decision, and you know, if and when I do, it'll be a privileged decision, and as are all discussions with Mueller, shouldn't be discussed publicly. So I'm in a little bit of a box under the ethical constraints that lawyers operate in terms of discussing that. But in terms of my duties are, you know, to protect, you know, the presidency now, and also to protect future presidents as well, future White Houses. So it would certainly be something if it was if there was a subpoena battle, which I hope there won't be. We would have to make the judgment that you laid out.
And let me ask you two other general principle questions, and then we'll get into some specifics. Can a president of the United States be indicted?
There are two Office of Legal Counsel opinions in the Department of Justice on that, one from the Nixon era and one from the Clinton era, and both of those opinions say that a sitting president cannot be indicted, and that's the policy and practice of the Justice Department.
And I suppose this is a related question. Can a president of the United States pardon himself?
You know, that's a question that also has never been decided. There are experts, you know, on both sides. I can assure you that, you know, pardons have not been part of the lexicon here in my time. And, you know, they're neither a...
You've had no discussion of pardons at all in your current job at the White House?
Well, I mean, I learned about the Scooter Libby pardon and the consideration of the Jack Johnson pardon, but you know, nothing at all related to the Russian events.
So you've heard nothing of no consideration whatsoever of pardoning Michael Cohen, Michael Flynn, Paul Manafort, anybody?
Okay. Nope.
Ty Cobb, it's Rick Klein here. I want to talk about the good to be with you here. So I want to talk about the question list that we saw came out in the New York Times earlier in the week. And I know you're not going to want to talk about specific questions and answers in this, but your read of this list, is there anything that Mueller's team is pursuing here that you view as out of bounds, as inappropriate to even be asked?
So quite honestly, and I hate to be a dud guest on this, but quite honestly, those discussions, you know, are ongoing between the president's lawyers, you know, Jay Sekulow, Rudy Giuliani, you know, Marty and Jane Raskin, and I'm not involved other than peripherally with regard to certain White House equities in those discussions. So I can't really even confirm or deny, you know, the question aspects of it. But, you know, that I will say that all the discussions between the president's lawyers and the special counsel's office have been highly professional, not aggressive. A lot gets accomplished. There's a lot to work through, and you know they're still working it through. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody's going to have some tough decisions to make, but they're, you know, all the discussions leading up to that are quite civil and quite professional, and I've got nothing bad to say in terms of you know, the way that we've been treated by the special counsel.
So the argument put forward by Joe DiGenova, who has been an outside advisor to President Trump, almost came aboard his legal team, and it was approvingly quoted, apparently, by President Trump on Twitter.
Just this morning.
Is that the questions themselves are an intrusion on presidential power. Do you share that view, that there are some things generally that can't be asked because those even asking the question intrudes on presidential power?
So I understand the argument that Joe makes. Joe's been aggressive advocate on behalf of the president, and you know, done a great job, I think, in terms of issue spotting and, you know, provocatively, you know, raising issues that are worthy of consideration. Certainly, many of the questions, you know, go to the heart of the president's, many of the questions in the article go to the heart of a president's Article II powers under the Constitution. So I understand Joe's argument in that regard, but it's not something that I'd be in a position to give a legal opinion on, because you know any legal opinions I give on that are will be privileged.
Do you think that Bob Mueller leaked the list or his team leaked the list?
Oh, absolutely not. I have no doubt that he did not.
Who do you think did it? Where would it come from?
You know, I don't want to speculate on that. I think it's very difficult to see who, if anybody, benefits from the leak of that, other than people who have been trying to sabotage the possibility of an interview and or generate chaos around here. And that list is you know, too long for me to go through. But I'm not pointing a finger at anybody.
But to be clear, you say that that list was not leaked by Special Counsel Robert Mueller or anybody in his office.
I have a high degree of confidence that that's, you know, that that's not the case based on the times people themselves and you know, ongoing discussions with the Special Counsel.
That it did not come from the Special Counsel.
So and as the piece reported, although it got lost in translation on many networks and print organizations, that, you know, the Times, in a blaring sentence, made it plain that it didn't come from the president's legal team, and yet, you know, Rudy got immediately accused of leaking it, and there's not a chance in hell that he did it.
So I'm going to ask you something else that we heard from John Dowd, the former, until recently, the president's personal lawyer on all of this. He told us that he told the special counsel, this isn't some game. You are screwing with the work of the president of the United States. Is the special counsel screwing with the work of the president of the United States?
So, first off, you know, any discussions with Mueller shouldn't be discussed in public, certainly by a lawyer for the president. I don't know. I wasn't at that meeting, but in my view, Mueller is doing, you know, what he was assigned to do. I mean, he didn't start the investigation. He got pulled in by Rosenstein and was given an assignment. You know, he's been working that. People can argue about, you know, whether or not there's a lot of sprawl. I understand those arguments, but at the same time, again, he didn't launch into this on his own. He was given an assignment. I think it's important that, having been a special trial counsel to an independent counsel in the past, I think it's important that the Justice Department exercise its oversight in these matters. And at the moment, you know, most of the discussions that we've had with them have been, you know, quite professional.
Does the president still look forward to testifying, to talking to Robert Mueller?
I think so. As Rudy said, and Rudy and Jay and Jane and Marty, the president's personal lawyers, you know, they'll make that decision or make a recommendation to the president on that. I don't think anything's off the table. Notwithstanding the, you know, landmines of the last couple of weeks, you know, I think things are still in a lane working toward a resolution of the interview issue. You know, I hope it works out amicably, but that's in the hands of his personal attorneys.
But you yourself said back in January, as the president told me, you echoed those words. You said that you thought that he was looking forward to the interview.
Oh.
You suggested the interview was going to happen. Is that interview less likely to happen now than it was?
On that, I don't know. I'm not because I can't really peg how likely it was at any given time. But it's certainly not. It's certainly not off the table, and people are working hard to make decisions and work toward an interview. And assuming that can be concluded favorably, there'll be an interview. Assuming it can't be, assuming an agreement can't be reached, it'll go a different route.
You mentioned these landmines. I think one of them that a lot of us have talked about is the Michael Cohen affair that apparently has really upset the president. He's tweeted about it. He does not feel like he is being treated or his lawyer is being treated fairly in the Michael Cohen matter. How does that, though, impact from a legal perspective any of these questions that could present themselves? I'm trying to understand the argument for not sitting down with the special counsel, not cooperating with this investigation.
So I can't be 100% sure of this, but what I recall from reading the article was that there weren't any Cohen questions. I think beyond his peripheral involvement in a pre-race hotel thing in Moscow that was an option that fizzled out after a few months. The Cohen thing does upset the president. I mean, anytime that your personal lawyer, has communication seized between you and that lawyer, I don't know a private citizen in the United States that wouldn't be upset about that. I think the president, understandably, is trying to accomplish so much domestically and internationally that this is this is a obstacle for him in that regard. He'd like to get it behind him. I think that's one of the reasons he was eager to sit down with Mueller, and may well still get that opportunity.
Is it impacting the presidency right now, having to deal with this? He's suggested as much on Twitter that he's talking to North Korea, trying to denuclearize. Is it impacting day to day?
Yes.
How so?
Well, I mean, they're only 20, this is a gentleman who, doesn't sleep, but maybe three and a half hours a night. He works, furiously the rest of the time. He likes to get things done. He goes at a pace that people have a hard time keeping up with. And, if he's got to take time out of his day frequently to deal with this.
So I wanted to also ask you, we heard Rod Rosenstein yesterday say that the Justice Department would not be extorted. He was was in response to a question about some of the president's strongest allies on Capitol Hill drafting articles of impeachment to impeach the deputy attorney general. What do you make of this talk of impeaching Rod Rosenstein?
Well, I have to let the committees deal with that. I can't really occupy myself with that too much. On the other hand, it's certainly been an objective of the president that his administration not be held in contempt or criminal contempt as the previous administration leaders at the Justice Department were. He'd like to see cooperation between the Justice Department and the FBI and Congress. But as far as I know, he's not weighed in on the impeachment issue. And I have great respect for Mr. Rosenstein. He's been a decorated public servant, and I can understand his position. On the other hand, Congress has certain powers, and so does he, and so do others in the government, and the relationships are not perfect between the Justice Department and the Hill, as you all know, and anybody reading the paper or listening to the news also knows. So the president doesn't have a position on the impeachment issue, and I've not heard one stated. But Congress certainly has the right to raise objections when they are not getting access that they believe they're entitled to.
But on January,
and the Justice Department has the right to argue its position. So I think that's a battle that's raging elsewhere, and I'm busy on my own behalf.
It's striking, by the way, to hear you talk in relatively glowing terms about Rod Rosenstein in all of this, and to hear the president repeatedly lash out at Rosenstein, saying that you know, he says that, that Mueller is the most conflicted of all, except perhaps for Rod Rosenstein. What are your conversations with the president like on Rosenstein? Why is he constantly lashing out at his own deputy attorney general?
I think it's the as best I recall, that most of those comments are directed to the deteriorating relationship between the Justice Department and Congress, and trying to, you know, I think he may be trying to jumpstart the Justice Department to improve those relations. I'm sure that Rod is trying to do that. So, but I can't speak for the president on all his tweets. You know, I know he feels that it's important to get his message out in that form, and I don't have any control over that.
Because in one of those tweets, he said, Mueller is the most conflicted of all, except Rosenstein, who signed FISA and Comey letters. No collusion, so they go crazy. Do you understand? I know it's hard to ask anybody about the president's tweets except the president, but do you understand what he means by Mueller is the most conflicted at all? What's he referring to there?
You know, I can't really interpret that without you know, without making a legal argument, and you know, I don't want to be making legal arguments publicly to the extent, you know, on points like that, to the extent that I have discussions with the president, they're private and appropriately so.
You said earlier that an interview with Mueller is not off the table. Is firing Mueller off the table?
He has not been fired. I think I've been quoted, you know, about 90 times in the duration of this matter, saying that Mueller is not being fired. I know Bob, like and respect him, and there's certainly no plans to terminate it.
What's your best read on when this wraps up? I mean, we've been hearing for a year now.
It's hard to say. I mean, so, you know, every time it gets, you know, every time that, you know, there's a possibility to sort of close things, something happens that, you know, delays things a month or so. I mean, there's some good examples like, you know, the Wolf book. I mean, basically, right, you know, interviews were all wrapped up for the most part, and that necessitated bringing in new witnesses and bringing back old witnesses. FBI report, Inspector General report, also raises, you know, new issues, and I'm sure the Comey report and the Comey book raise new issues. So every day that goes without a resolution, you know, is a frustration to the people involved. You can't prevent history from marching on, or people from illegally leaking things. So
I know you have to go. I just want to go through a couple of quick things before we let you go.
It's not that I have to go. I mean, you know, you guys told me this would be 7 minutes, and I'm at 21
We're
now.
We're enjoying the conversation.
Okay. So
you're I'm happy to talk.
You're very compelling guy to talk to. I wanted to get to this we're trying to understand the president's position on all of this stuff.
I respect that, and it's just there are certain limitations on me as a lawyer.
Understood.
Okay, so because you understand the powers of the presidency better, certainly better than us, better than most people. When the president tweets as he did, at some point I have no choice but to use the powers granted to the presidency and get involved. Do you have a sense of what he's referring to there?
I do not. I haven't discussed that tweet with him.
Okay, and on this question of whether compelling a president to testify, as we have the example of what happened in Watergate with the Watergate tapes, it's not obviously an exact comparison, but the Supreme Court in that case ruled 9-0 that the president could be compelled to turn over the tapes, and the tapes were turned over. If a case now were to get to the, if this were to come to the Supreme Court now, the question of compelling the president to testify before a grand jury, do you have any reason to believe that it wouldn't be a similarly lopsided decision that the Supreme Court, as it has done in so many other cases before, would decide that the president is basically not above the law on this and can be compelled to testify?
I'm not going to handicap, how that would end up, and I hope that doesn't go to the Supreme Court, but it's definitely under the OLC opinions, it's definitely an unsettled question, and people would put forth their best arguments. The presidency was designed by the founders to have its own extraordinary powers. Congress was designed to have its own extraordinary powers, and the judiciary was designed to have its own extraordinary powers. Significant precedents out there subsequent to Nixon that establish a bar in terms of what the Justice Department or an independent counsel may be entitled to from the White House, and that you're absolutely right on the 9-0 opinion. There are issues vis-a-vis the pulling the president himself into a legal proceeding that I think would have to be litigated before any resolution of the issue was achieved, unless they can reach an agreed upon process, which is, I think, everybody's hope.
Well, Ty Cobb, this has been a fascinating conversation, and we will let you go, but I need to ask, as a lifelong baseball fan, and John is too, I've read you say that it's family lore that you've got a distant family relationship with the baseball legend Ty Cobb. Do you know
right.
what the relationship is? I'd be so curious. I do Ancestry.com.
Make too much of this, but the stories from our grandparents and my grandfather had 12 siblings, so I've heard these stories a lot over time. But he was purportedly a second cousin of my grandfather, and I think even in West Virginia, that's not a blood relationship anymore. Not to offend West Virginia.
And Ty Cobb, should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame?
I think that's an excellent question. I think certainly if he goes, I'm not virulent on that. I certainly understand why he's not in, but if he goes and people like Shoeless Joe definitely belong.
All right, Ty Cobb, thank you very much for joining us on Powerhouse Politics and going longer than planned. We really appreciate your time.
Not at all.
We look forward to talking to you again, hopefully soon.
Enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, that was the end of the interview. Moments later, we learned Ty Cobb was out. So we urgently got him back on the phone because we knew our listeners and frankly, we knew that we would want to know what the heck is going on. So here is part two of our discussion with Ty Cobb, The Departure. Hey, Ty.
Hey, guys.
Hey, thanks a lot for coming back on. Appreciate it.
No sweat.
So now I understand you've got some big news. Ty, you're leaving the White House?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't want to break this news because there was an orderly path forward, but obviously somebody leaked it. I appreciate you asking me about it. I can't really discuss much other than to say that I've been working with the personnel people here and in discussions with the leadership, meaning the president and Chief Kelly, for several weeks on a retirement date. And we finally settled on the end of this month. And I'll be leaving, having stayed longer than I intended, but I'll be leaving at the end of this month.
So you came in, you've been the one that's been talking about cooperation, full cooperation mode, I think is the way you put it, with the special counsel. Does the fact that you're leaving, is that going to change this? Because certainly there have been others that have been saying that the president should take a much more aggressive stance against the special counsel. You've been preaching cooperation. Is that going to change?
Yeah, but I'm inside and this is my job. So, and particularly as somebody who's, you know, read thousands and thousands of documents and would like to help the president get this behind him so he can keep the country safe. You know, cooperation definitely was the right move, and definitely the path that would lead to the quickest resolution. So I hope that they're able to work something out. Been happy to contribute to that, but it's really in on that side of the fence. It's really in Rudy Giuliani and Jay Sekulow and the Raskins' lap. And then here at the White House, you know, almost everything that I was brought on to do has been accomplished in terms of witnesses being interviewed and documents being produced. So it's a reasonable time for me to go, and I'm going to miss it. I miss the people here. I'm deeply grateful for the honor of given to me by the president of being allowed to serve the country, and we'll always be grateful for that.
And you'll be staying on through the end of the month?
Yes.
Anything you can tell us about Emmett Flood is going to be replacing you?
So I don't, I haven't had any discussions with Emmett. He's a very highly regarded lawyer. I assume his portfolio will be somewhat broader than mine, just because, as I say, you know, the primary work done by my office has been completed. But there will be, you know, I'm sure as this goes forward, a great need for additional counseling in this area. So I'm sure he'll do a great job.
All right, Ty, and you're outgoing as you prepare to. You still have some work to do, obviously. You got another 4 weeks to go. But what would be your advice to your replacement and to the president's team going forward about how to deal with the special counsel?
I'm not a big advice guy.
Yeah.
I got sort of a simple approach to that, which is do the next right thing.
Because you have, as we discussed, you have preached cooperation. Cooperate with the special counsel. That's the quickest way to get things done. With you gone, that leaves one voice who's been the strongest on the team advocating cooperation no longer there. Imagine that's going to change the dynamic a bit.
Well, I wouldn't overestimate my influence or I see much of what's been written as a aggressive internal debate. It really hasn't been. And I know that the cooperation mode was thoroughly vetted and agreed upon by many. So I wouldn't suggest that I'm the sole voice of, cooperation in the White House. That's really not fair to other people.
So last question before we let you go. What would you say to those who have urged the president, both inside and outside? Certainly there have been very loud voices on the outside that he should take a very aggressive and hostile stance towards the special counsel, to fight the special counsel, and who have criticized your approach of cooperating.
Well, criticism is not a concern of mine. If people who have these jobs can be influenced by criticism, they shouldn't be in those jobs, because you owe your unfettered best judgment based on training and experience to every task. And I'm not really, again, sort of not in the advice mode, but the reality is under the law, particularly The SB case that's frequently discussed, and other decisions. The cooperation of the White House is a significant consideration in terms of the legal rights of potential adversaries. And I think we leave the White House, or I leave the White House on good standing.
All right, and we hear your phone blowing up there, Coy. You got quite a few messages coming in, so we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us on a
No, absolutely. I appreciate it and enjoyed working with you guys. And I can't say that I'm going to be – I'll miss you.
A little bit. Come on.
you guys have always been very professional, and particularly enjoyed working with you two and with Catherine Falders and John Santucci. Just been real pros.
All right, yeah, we like those guys. We have a very good team. Hey, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it, Ty. Have a good day.
Always. See ya. Bye. Thanks.
There you have it, folks. Quite an edition of Powerhouse Politics. I want to thank the entire Powerhouse Politics team. Trevor Hastings, Avery Miller, Angie Yak, Catherine Falders, who helped set this up, and of course, my co-host here, Rick Klein. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week.